Are we going?
And a podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
Advertiser call.
Billis Major at your service.
Don't forget me.
Sarah, did you forget me?
Oh, let's go! That's class!
There is no such thing as...
Perfect, no notes.
Hello. Yeah, it's the end of series. Can you imagine that? Because I can't. Because I'm living it.
Wow.
Wow. I'll go for you, Trumpy. Imagine that, because I can't live, because I'm living a bit off.
We have finally reached, this is the moment where we have connected with, this is the moment where I started watching Doctor Who. We have caught up with the present, and I feel so old, because that was 13 years ago. And I'm still watching the show.
Well, the thing about today, beyond being the point where you started watching, and we mean that, of course, across the board, because you've been faking with remarkable accuracy every single reaction you've had for the last 4 years.
Yeah. I have never seen any other episode before this one.
Actually, well, you saw one episode of Miracle Day, and you were like, that was amazing television.
Oh yeah. My God. Yeah, well, we have to introduce our guests, because I need to tell our guests something. Yeah. We simply must.
We have a new friend joining us today. They want to make themselves known. And,
hi, everyone.
Yeah,
I'm Jason, new friend to the pod, old friend personally. I feel like I've been campaigning for this run of episodes for a minute, as a staunch Moffat era defender of this show. I feel like someone has to come speak up for these this run of episodes.
You got the best one, so you know.
You know what? My reaction to this episode is that meme of I owe you an apology. I wasn't really familiar with your game. It's me being like, Stephen Moffat, I'm sorry. I forgot you can write a good finale. I'm really sorry, my man. Mm-hmm. I apologize.
I've been listening to your episodes that have released so far for this season and last season as well, which I think we all agree that season 5 is like really great. Mm-hmm. But I kind of expected, as series 6 started, to get a little bit more mixed reactions from you both. But I think you even the wishy-washy episodes, you guys have been a little bit more positive than I thought you would be. So
I'm a staunch Curse of the I'm a staunch Curse of the Black Spot defender. So
I can't condone piracy. I'm sorry.
It's me. The last one.
But yeah, if you want to like talk about like how you kind of got into the whole, if you want to please pitch us on how you got into the show, you know,
So I had a lot of friends in high school that were really into the show that started pretty much watching it with the revival of New Who that had been kind of on me for a long time, that, oh, you would really like the show, you've got to watch it. And it was also around this season airing that I started like, okay, I'm going to try to do it. And I started with, obviously it was all on Netflix at the time, I remember. So I started with like Rose, and I never like, it never hooked me immediately. So I think I've watched Rose like 5 times. Not because I think that episode's bad, it's a good episode, but sometimes TV shows just like take a little bit of running start a few times for me. But I did jump ahead to just kind of like peek around a bit, and I jumped to the 11th hour, the first Matt Smith episode, and I was like, okay, this is my jam. Like, this is, I like what this is doing a lot. So it kind of gave me something to run towards a bit of, I've just got to get there. And then I enjoyed it along the way. But yeah, I became one of those like American teens that fell in love during the Matt Smith era and rode that, the high of the Moffat train for a couple years. And whether it was 11 leaving or I was going to college at the time, it's kind of drifted off from the show, but I kept up with it. It would just always be like when the series would end, I would just watch all the episodes in one batch, and then it would go like 2 years until the new series would come out, and I would be like, I should get caught up on that and realize, oh, I actually am caught up. There's just not been any Doctor Who in a long time. So I've kept up with it, but it also is always like kind of sat in the back of my mind as like, oh yeah, I should get caught up on that. And, you know, I've seen all the episodes, so I still follow it, love the current stuff still, but I still contend that 11 is my favorite Doctor, and this run pretty much I think from series 5 to 7 is like the best, the peak of the show for me. I will come defend those latter series 7 episodes. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to stand up.
Can we get you back for Power 3?
I genuinely love that episode. It's one of my favorite episodes.
That's the weird thing. I only have good memories about that first half of Series 1. Right. But very, very few memories. Like, I remember liking Towel Called Mercy. I remember liking Bells of St. John.
Yeah.
And it does have Cold War, which I think is a good-ass... No, sorry. First half is not Bells of St. John. Half. Yeah, that's the second half. I'm sorry, I take it all back. There actually is. I do like. I'm the rare Town Called Mercy and Dinosaurs in a Spaceship defender. So we'll see that.
I am as well. I think that premiere. The premiere is really great. I love the silliness of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. I love Town Called Mercy. Love Power 3. Like that whole, especially that like final arc for. I guess spoilers if you haven't gotten there yet, but the final arc for Rory and Amy is like perfect. Perfect run of episodes.
And there's a record of me on maybe two episodes of an American Doctor Who podcast that came out in 2013. There's a record of me going 1 week hating Reigns of Akatan, the next week being like, actually, that was superb. And I stand by that. I think that episode's incredible. And look forward to getting to that one as well.
I also agree. That was for the longest time. I don't know what I would cite now, but for the longest time, I would cite Reigns of Akatan as like my favorite Doctor Who episode.
Ooh, damn.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's the one I've rewatched the least. I actually randomly rewatched Asylum of the Daleks one of these days, and I really liked it. As far as New Who Dalek episodes, it's not that bad. We've had worse. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the one I've least rewatched, and I think I was watching this episode, and the whole time I was like, oh, this rocks. This is great. This is awesome. Why did I hate this? Because I hated this. I remember hating this when it came out. Like, I don't know where, and I will not mention the name of the forum. I hope it is no longer online. You could probably find stuff from me being like, I hate this episode. Moffat doesn't know how to write or something. But I watched it this time, and I was like, why did I hate it? Like, there's nothing to it. It's so brisk and fast and enjoyable, and literally it's so hard to get bored. It just like there's always something fun. The next scene, the emotional conclusion is really good. The solution to the problem introduced in the season Honestly, I would even say it is the only time Moffat introduced an unsolvable problem. This is my opinion. It is the only time he introduced an unsolvable problem and then gave an actually satisfying solution to it.
Right. I see the reveal so well. Like, you don't see when it reveals how he survives. You don't see that mechanism coming. Like, when they set it up earlier, you don't see that as like, oh, that's going to be how they do it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it has maybe like the best use of, they don't do this anymore, and then again, Moffat only did this two seasons. The best way of bringing back all these old guest characters and having them pop up for like either a scene or two, where in Churchill's case, 20 minutes, and just have them do like a couple of cool bits. Mm-hmm. And you go like, oh yeah, I remember the Tesselecta. Oh yeah, I remember this guy. Oh yeah, the other episode. Oh, this is fun. I wish they would introduce more random one episode characters and then bring them back in the finale. That was always like my favorite stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the Wedding the River Song, it broadcast on the 1st of October 2011, you know, October the 1st be with you. Directed by Jeremy Webb, who, you know, speaking of other things, directed Curse of the Black Spot. So, you know, for me, it's Swings and Roundabouts, written by Stephen Moffat, of course. In a sentence, so time has gone all weird and wobbly and woozy because Weaver Song, who is revealed to be the person in the astronaut suit who shoots Doctor Who, refuses to do so, which means the timeline kind of collapses, though the Doctor manages to save it by having her. Basically, the way they fix it is like they get the touch, so they get married. And he touches River, and River reveals actually to her parents, Amy and Rory, of course, that he survived being shot because he was actually in the Tesselecta the entire time. And as this happens, the Doctor's putting, because Dorim's been beheaded, you know, he's putting Dorim's head back into a crypt. And Dorim's like, don't you want to know the first question? The question from all your life, and he reveals the question is, in fact, Doctor Who? Question mark. This is something I wanna say about this one. This reminded me the most of was, and this is something I did not expect going in. Paul and Pressburger and like kind of early David Lean, the kind of like a lot of like a matter of life and death and stuff like that. It feels it's such a kind of like a small romantic kind of swooning kind of, you know, fantastical and a kind of interpersonal drama. And I think it is quite honestly one of like the most beautiful episodes I've ever done. And I think it's just absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
I agree.
I think that is what you just said is kind of the magic of the when the Smith era like hits. That's the magic that it has, like this like whimsical, romantic, kind of fantastical epic. You know, that's what Moffat kind of is trying to weave. And sometimes he hits, sometimes he misses for people. But, you know, the whole idea of his like huge arcs and these grand payoffs and mysteries and stuff is trying to make it feel so grand and epic and and all that stuff. I completely agree. My question for both of you both are tapped into the, you know, the culture of Doctor Who a little bit more than I. Is this an episode that people don't like? Like, is this one that people are kind of like, Moffat, he's done it again? And if so, what is it that they don't really like about it?
Well, as we're recording this in the beginning of 2025, the problem is that right now, public Who opinion on Moffat has swung back to positive, which was not the case, I would say, 2 to 4 years ago. Like, if you ask that question in 2017, I think people would say no. If you ask that question in 2024, people would say, actually, we do love it. So I think David is going to disagree.
How long ago do you think 2017 is, Michelle?
Yeah, well, first...
Oh no, 7. Oh shit, I'm not good with math. I'm not good with math. Wait, I'm not good with math, guys. I'm sorry.
The thing I think is, I think it's always had this reputation because, in part, like, people look at Series 6 and they're like, that's a season where he was compromised by having to run two shows, so all his stuff is kind of at a compromised stage. I think people kind of miss... I think there was an expectation, especially after last season, that people wanted like this big epic kind of, you know, showdown of a finale. And what they got instead was this story about someone who realizes that people care for them so much they'd be willing to let the like entire concept of existence die just so they wouldn't, just so they themselves wouldn't die. Mm-hmm. And it like, it throws people off so much that I think people just like in the immediate aftermath were like, that was terrible, that was shit, that was so stupid, you know, where was like the Dalek fight, where was the like big kind of silence versus doctor showdown, where was all this big stuff, why was it just like, you know, a chamber drama about people like realizing what it means to be loved, you know, what was going on there,
The doctor never faces off against the silence, by the way.
No, he doesn't.
He does not. It's not the person who kills the season villain is Amy. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, he doesn't face off against the silence yet.
Yes, but if you were working on the idea of like, okay, we introduced the silence in the first episode, and in the last episode, the doctor's gonna fight the silence. Like, he doesn't even share like a scene with them. The only scene he does, they're in the tanks, which is a great scene. Mm-hmm. But that's like the thing. Like, it's not. I think jumping onto that, it's also one of the few finales that both sets up and solves itself in 48 minutes, which Moffat does not do again, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Series 7 is a... No, Series 7 is a one-parter, too. It's The Name of the Doctor. But well, I'm so wrong, guys.
The thing with the Series 7 one, to me, is that, like, it's the thing with Series 7 is that it's like very much kind of set up for like, it's like closing off like the kind of the whole arc of like, you know, Trenzalore and stuff, but also setting up like the 50th. So it's kind of in like an in-between state. Mm. Whereas this feels like much more of, I'm going to tell you a story about it. Like it, I mean, to me, this is part of an arc in itself, which is Doctor right. being like, the people I love will be willing to like let everything die for my sake, so I'm going to basically abandon them all, but with the pretext of I'm going to make sure that no one can ever make like love me that way again, so like, you know, I don't have to risk having to like, you know, deal with these kind of things. And I just think people really, like, I don't want to be reductive. I think Doctor Who fans are kind of stupid, which, you know, I've spoken about a lot before. I think some Doctor Who fans could really do with looking at what they're saying, especially ones who insist they save the show by finding tapes. Both of them could really do it with looking at themselves. But I think people have an idea of what the show is, and when it doesn't meet that idea, they instinctively kind of recoil in like horror and disgust from what it is, rather than being like, okay, it's an attempt to do something. Like the Dalek episodes that Moffat does, like, especially Asylum, I remember Asylum of the Daleks was like, people like that one, but they were also kind of, you know, oh, well, you know, it's kind of, it's like fan service, and it's kind of whatever, it's a bit kind of, you know, there's kind of stupid stuff, blah, 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 blah. But like, even that is like subverting things in a way that I think it doesn't necessarily gel with what Doctor Who fans want sometimes. And what they want is basically the live action version of what Big Finish does with their box sets, where it's like all these different people that you recognize, like all these like brands come together and you know, quote things with each other, and then they fight like Davros or whatever and they go home. Whereas like stories like this are telling, you know, they're really kind of deconstructing what the Doctor is as a character, and really kind of re-examining that. I think part of the reaction also was that, like, when this episode went out, a lot of the people watching it were maybe not old enough to kind of grasp that kind of reaction as well. Because I know, like, when I went out, I was kind of probably like, oh, I don't know, it was a bit kind of whatever. But, like, with the benefit of being, you know, so much older now, it really kind of affects me a lot more than I would have at the time. I think a lot of those posters maybe would be the same now, only they maybe, again, every single point I have on this is going to come back to a lot of Doctor Who fans just don't really understand the basic tenets of storytelling or, like, subtlety or thematic kind of build up. And I think, therefore, they see this episode as, like, a rushed one episode thing when it should have been a two-part and it should have been this and that and the other, when it really shouldn't be. It works perfectly as it is, as this incredible kind of deconstruction, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think that there's, I think you're spot on. And the expectation of, like, some kind of grander finale. Do you think that, the mid-season, the two-parter at the mid-season finale, like, kind of led to people wanting, because that's all the things that you just said, like, that people are wanting. That's the Doctor kind of giving big speeches and having a big showdown, and it's a two-parter, and all these reveals and things like that. And then this being so much smaller and self-contained of an episode, it is. I see what you're saying of, like, how people maybe got their hopes up for something a little bit more epic. It isn't epic, but
I think it is that like, people, I think one of the things that kind of goes against them in that sense is that series 5 ends with the universe exploding and then being unexploded, and, like, it is kind of hard to go from that to something like that is kind of, like, paradoxically small, but also, like, the implications obviously are huge. Like,
yeah,
you know, this, because of what's happening, like, Meredith Vieira is on
TV. That fucked me in the head so much. It felt like God was, like, sending me a sign. I was like, what? Because it was so fast. It's literally one shot of, like, 4 seconds, and she's on a screen. And it's like, you know that bit from Fight Club where he inserts a frame of, like, porn in, like, a kid's movie? That's what it felt like. I just went, like, was that Meredith Vieira? Like, why is she there?
You know, the whole story with Meredith Vieira, that she went on to, like, she was doing, like, a set tour, like, to be like, oh, you know, I'm in this new episode. And then she spoiled, like, the Cybermen were back in closing time and stuff like that by accident, because she did, like, a whole, like, spot where she was like, I'm here with, like, the Cybermen, and look at them, and everyone, I remember that being, like, everyone being like, why did she spoil that? But, like, this is the thing, like...
What do you mean when she spoiled that? She doesn't know she's spoiling. What do you mean? Go outside! What are you talking about? What did she spoil that?
It is funny God that damn it. We got Meredith Vieira here, but we don't get Meredith Vieira in the 10-part spin-off series that is set entirely in America with American actors.
We should tell Jason this. So the listeners are listening to this at the end of Series 6, but we are recording this at the beginning of our second block of Series 6, right after doing Torchwood Miracle Day, 4 days in a row, which was hell. I mean, the last day was hell. So it's such a refresh to go from, especially those last 4 episodes, to this. A story that has a beginning, middle, and end, and is a satisfying tale. Wow, what a life changing thing it is to watch television. That doesn't make me want to. Anyway,
I did, coming into this, I told Michelle, I was like, I'm gonna watch all of Series 6, because it's been, you know, maybe a year or two since I've done, like, a full watch through of these episodes, and I didn't get around to doing that in time. But I go in to watch this episode the other night. And it starts with, you know, time happening all at one place, and you know, the cold open with the doctor and his crazy beard and his long hair, which we've got to talk about the long hair. I immediately thought, like, oh, did I miss something at the end of the last episode? I didn't remember, like, all the twists and turns of this episode. So I was like, maybe this is, like, something happened at the end of the last one. So I was like, let me go back real quick one episode. And I got jump scared because it's fucking James Corden episode again.
Oh, we got to rewatch that.
Definitely not something. That definitely didn't happen at the end of the James Corden episode.
It is just, yeah, I don't know. There is like a part of me that like understands when people are like, it should have been a two-parter, and like the whole like, because the whole 20, like the opening 20 minutes is like such a like distinct section of like the episode, and also like the general plot where it's like, you know, Churchill being like, and what happened then? Like that also does feel like a real throwback to that, like 40s and 50s kind of stuff. But like, I don't know. The other thing is like, why wasn't James Corden here? Why couldn't it be like, you know, Craig comes in and you know, stabs the Silence in the head or something, and starts dancing in a little mouse costume in front of some of the flying cars. Which is a good gag that the flying cars are just cars with like hot air balloons stuck to them rather than being like flying cars, and the Centurion at the traffic light waiting to go past and stuff, and obviously Charles Dickens on BBC Breakfast or whatever he's on, doing like a Russell T Davies kind of impression. I don't know. The look he has with the long hair, I think, is a great look.
So good.
It's so good.
He has. The thing is it looks, I every time I watch this episode, he's got the long hair it's got the vibe of like, you've customized your main character for your video game, and now all the ending credits scenes are playing, and you've got the, like the dumb costume that you picked out on it, and he's kind of just stuck in this mode, because he has weird hair in Name of the Doctor as well next season, right? He's got like a weird something going on with that as well.
He's the one beyond Capaldi, because obviously Capaldi gets like haircuts in between like scenes in series eight. He's the one who like tends to change his hair a lot, which is in, I mean, obviously like shoot, his doctor as well has done that as well, but like he's the one where it feels like his hair kind of grows out and grows back in and grows back out again, but it's in like stages where it kind of looks like you're saying, like he's customizing his hair more than anything. Obviously, in the next season, he's like shaving his head and stuff.
He should have kept a long floppy hair. It's really working.
He knows how it plays too, with the cowboy hat, with everything. He knows it plays well.
Yeah, the cowboy hat is a great addition to the whole ensemble. It's honestly maybe it's kind of stupid, funny, kind of sad that they got so obsessed with the fez, when I think the Stetson is genuinely a much better like addition to his costume. Like I could see him wearing that in other situations, not just this series or this episode. So that one, I was like, damn, he should have kept wearing that. I want to say, we were talking about this finale and how it differs from people's expectations. I was looking at the list of finales, and I do think that this finale does mark a very like turning point in Doctor Who. The RTD finales from series 1 to 4 are very much like, here's a big thing we're bringing back. We're a big, huge, like role-changing stakes thing that is like connected to the personal arc of the Doctor. So in like series 3, it's the Master who's connected to the Doctor not being alone. There's the Doomsday. It's the Cyberman and the Daleks, and it connects to Rose. And then series 5 does a version of this with Big Bang by literally having a story that revolves around Amy. And this is the first one where it revolves around, I mean, apart from the end of time, I would say, it revolves solely around the Doctor. I mean, it does revolve around River Song, but it is sort of like transitioning our attention towards the Doctor. And then in Series 7, you have The Name of the Doctor, where the stakes are exclusively to the Doctor. And then Series 8, you do have a little bit of that. But Series 9, again, stakes are exclusive to the Doctor. Series 10, he's saving the ship, but it's mostly about him and Bill. Mm-hmm. And then 13, right. I could not tell you what Battle of Vranskoravkolos was about. I do not remember. But again, timeless children. It's very personal stakes to the Doctor. The end of The Flux, which is weird because it is a story about the entire world being destroyed. The end of The Flux, the stakes are the Doctor like doing all that stuff regarding her past and Division. It's all power of the Doctor. Stakes are very personal to the Doctor. So
I would argue that Big Bang is about the Doctor, because in the inverse of like a thing that I think Moffat is largely saying through this run, through the 11 run, like if this one's about the Doctor beginning to reckon with the idea of his death and realizing what he means to people, I think the same thing can be said about the Big Bang in a way of like all of his enemies realizing like,
oh,
he's making so much noise, you know, like, oh, which is kind of led into, you know, built upon in this Series 6 arc of him, you know, what is the thing in the mid-season finale where they're like, the Doctor, people started using that word to mean warrior now or something like that. And it's like, that's coming from Big Bang of like, they've got to put him in this giant prison because he's so dangerous and all that stuff. And I think that's largely like where now we're headed into this like second act of that whole, you know, 11 arc of him reckoning with marching towards his death and who he is, I guess.
By the way, I just want to say, sorry about this. I'm coughing. I don't know why. Was the Doctor in Classic Who famous?
No.
Is the Doctor being famous a new Who thing?
Well, he did do in between Classic Who and New Who. There is a pretty big event that might have made him
more famous. There is that. I do agree with that. Because at the speech at the end, he was like, I got too big. I got too noisy. You got to go back in the shadows. And I was like, when was the last time he was in the shadows? And I was like,
A Classic Who, he kind of mostly is just unknown, I guess. I mean, there's some times where, like, he is kind of known, but I think mostly it is just people being like, you know, I mean, that's the whole thing of the question as well. Like, part of it is just like, we'll get to the question in more detail, but like, part of it obviously is, you know, people want to know like his name and his whole deal, but also part of it is just people being like, you know, who are you? You know, like not even like a general thing of like, you know, who are you as a person? Just like, who is a stranger that has just kind of appeared in front of me as I'm, you know, walking down the street or whatever. So I don't know. It like there's like, because there's obviously like one or two classic episodes where people know who he is, but then the rest is just like, you know, this strange man who blundered in, you know, whether he's wearing a bow tie or whether he's wearing like a big bright colored coat or he had a scarf or, you know, an umbrella, whatever. It was always just, here is this guy that we've just met called the Doctor or Doctor Who, whatever you want to call him. And we don't know who he is. It's not like people who know who, like, it's a Gavrok that Mark Gatiss plays, who is...
I liked him.
He's good. I think it's a really fun performance. I think it's a really fun idea of, like, this is where I love the world building, where it's, like, live chess, and they don't, like, you know, dwell on like the idea of it being live chess, that like, you know, you get shocked if you lose, whatever. And that Gavrok is like, I don't want them to think I'm a loser, so can you please throw the match and I'll help you out if you make it look really cool. Like that's like a funny kind of like, you know, it's such a great kind of exhibition, I guess, of Moffat's ability to like match tones and like mix tones and be like, you know, there's a lot of like levity and humor and fun, and you get like the kind of romantic stuff, and you get obviously like the action scenes and everything. I just think it's a really great kind of showcase for him. But yeah, he's never really like, he's never really known as like a person beyond maybe like one or two characters being like, oh, I've heard of you, you know, or like people like Drax,
right.
who's like, oh, it's my old friend Theta Sigma from the Academy. How's it going? It's
Well, there is one old friend in here. Sorry, just because the moment you mentioned old friend, I thought of.
Yeah.
Which I think is a very, very, the scene where I think it's a very clever idea to have the Doctor be like, and I'm going to keep running, and I've already been running, I'm going to keep running from my death. Nothing can change my mind. And then you have this moment of him calling the Brigadier and finding out that the Brigadier's died because Nicholas Courtney died in real life.
Yeah.
And it's very, very impactful because it's like one of those very...
the moment of the episode. I think it's like the moment it all really like you're having fun up to that point with all the reveals and the twists and the turns and like seeing how it all led up to this. But that's the moment of the Doctor realizing, you know, the certainty of death forever. Like he can't run forever from whatever is coming for him. And having someone so close to him and someone that, you know, had just recently passed away, or the actor who played the character recently passed away. Like it feels like the episode focuses down on this intimate story about death and the people close to you and having people that care about you. That's like the moment of the episode for me.
I think it's interesting as well that they kind of try and do this again down the line. In like much the same way as like trying to use it as a thematic kind of vehicle with regards to the bit in The Giggle when, you know, they're like talking about all this stuff and they're like, you know, Sarah Jane died. Can you believe that Sarah Jane is dead? Like that is also, I think, a moment that's really informed by this moment where it's like, like you keep going on, but all these people, you know, are gone. And they're not coming back, but you will come back. And I think it's like, I mean, obviously there it's kind of a bit strange because it's sandwiched between like, you know, Mavic Chen and references to, you know, God knows what else. But like, I think it's a really kind of, it's, I think beyond being like the best scene in the episode, the central scene in the episode, I think it's like maybe like one of the most definitive moments in the entire, like, you know, almost 20-year run of this revival. But like, it's a real kind of signifier of who this like person is, who this character is, what their whole deal is. I just think it's a really good scene. I think it's a really good moment. I think it's an episode that's just full of emotion, like very kind of sincere about the emotion it has. Which maybe
you know what? That sincerity. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say it's a showcase for Smith too, as his iteration of the Doctor is this person that kind of bounces off the walls a lot, but then has this eternal wisdom in his eyes that can like on the, you know, flip of a dime, just have that sincerity, like the weight of the world on his shoulders. And I think that moment is kind of a great, like his Doctor is the most suited for that moment, maybe too. Be kind of bouncing off the walls, you know, and refuting death and being like, oh, if we get a way out of it, I'll kind of just swagger around and, you know, wibbly whoop, I'll survive somehow. And the way he like switches and just kind of like fumbles through those cards that he has, it's just great performance from him, like to nail that switch and that scene.
I think another moment like that got to me this time is, when the first time he sees River, and I think he says like, oh, let me give you a hug. And you can tell he starts off with a joking tone, but then he's like, let me give you a hug. And he almost like launches at her. And then everyone is like, oh, no, hold on. He can't touch her. And in that moment, he just has like this look of like, oh, you are really testing me right now. Like, it is such a good little beat. Speaking on the sincerity of the episode, there was something that I think is such a It's such a dumb idea, but I loved it, which is when they start getting married, you notice that Murray Gold is putting the wedding march in this theme, but it's like a slow, sad version. And I was like, God damn it, that actually worked this time. I was like, listen to it, going, oh, this is kind of sad and creepy, but also weirdly like romantic too. The way that they get married, like that whole little ceremony of them holding the tie, and there's like very little space between them, and then they exchange. What is it that he has Rory and Amy say? I consent.
I consent. Gladly give.
He never says this is. There's so many little details. He never says this is the way we do things in Gallifrey, but he says like, well, we're in the battlefield, so we're gonna have to do the quick version, which is like, why do you know what the quick version is, and why do you guys have like a quick version for a battlefield that says so much about Gallifrey as a culture with so little?
It's another kind of sincere moment that is like sincere in a very funny way, but also I think really thematically is like the full stop, amen, capper moment. And we'll get to like, because we'll talk about the question stuff as well. But at the end, when Dorian is shouting the name of the show, and it ends with Matt Smith like looking down the camera and just smiling, that is, I think, the perfect way to like close out that kind of whole thing, and just be like, you know, because it's like a fun kind of little playful moment of like, you know, oh, it's the name of the show, but it's also just like them underlining like the idea of this whole thing wasn't that like, you know. The mystery and the thematic purpose isn't like, you know, who the silence, why they're going to stop this thing from happening. It's, you know, this, like, what is this person to everyone in the world?
And who is this person? Yeah,
and the ultimate answer is he's Doctor Who.
I love the moment right before the wedding, and it's also kind of a corny, you know, it's one that the Tumblr girls in 2011 were all over, I'm sure. But the, you know, when she's like, I'll be in so much pain to kill you. And he's like, more than all the other beings in the galaxy or the universe or whatever he says. And she's like, yes. And it's just like,
I was like, she needs to say yes. She needs to say yes. And it's like the way she says it, like she's considering it. You could see her thinking. I think there's only one thing that Alex Kingston can't do, and is convincingly look at Arthur Darvill and Karen Gillian and say mummy and daddy in a way that does not sound weird. But everything else she is really, really good at.
I think the chemistry she and Smith have in this is absolutely electric, and it just completely like it elevates what's already like really good into something like incredible, because they're just bouncing off each other. They're really playing into like this idea of, you know, he's mad with her, but he's mad at her not because of, you know, he's mad at her because of what she's doing, but also because he knows why she's doing it, and he doesn't like, he feels the kind of weight of like why she's doing it, and that she in turn sells the idea of like, you know, well, why wouldn't I do this really, really well. I just think like, I think the interplay between everyone is good. I don't know, I think it's like it's her best performance, I think, in the role until the next one. The one after this one is I think her like ultimate kind of you know, statement on the role. The thing I kind of, it's not that I don't know. There's the Kavarian stuff, I think, is handled in the most ideal way. If you're like kind of, because they're kind of, you know, they're kind of moving through this episode so quickly that like they have to kind of address, you know, all that stuff obviously as well. I think the way they handle her character is probably like the most ideal way they could handle that character, which is that, you know, she gets like that one kind of evil speech off, and then she gets that kind of moment of pleading, and she's gone, and she's never coming back.
Yes, I love that bit. That is such a. He's very precious to me. You want to know what else he is? And I said, I hope she says not here. And she said, not here. I was like, not hell here. Yes.
It's also a character that, like, I don't need a lot of time with that character. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it feels, you were saying it feels a little rushed, but I'm so, especially at that point in the episode, I'm so much more interested in, like, how is the Doctor going to pull this off? Because we know he will. Mm-hmm. And where is this going? How is, you know, how is this going to resolve? How is this going to figure out? I'm more invested in that stuff than Kavarian stuff. Like, I don't need to see that character again. Like, so just having, like, a little bit of time with her to close it out is completely, it works.
And also, given who Frances Barber is in real life, it's for the best that she just disappears. But yeah, I don't know.
I was about to ask. Has Big Finish done anything set in this reality? I was like, no. It's weird they haven't tried to bring this reality back.
I think
because it's so much fun to be like, and then there's weird shit happening.
I think they are just kind of happy to be like, we'll bring the silence back. That's about as far as we'll go. Like Simon Callow doesn't come back to play Charles Dickens again. And Meredith Fierro, obviously her rate is probably too high for them to be able to, you know, they get like a Meredith Fierro impersonator to play her in, you know, the Trinity Wells box set. Which I would listen to, honestly, if they were like tomorrow, they were like, we're doing the Trinity Wells box set. It's like Trinity Wells and Meredith Vieira and those fake newscasters from Miracle Day who were talking about how Oswald Danes might be the second coming of a new world. I would listen to that, you know, 15 times over. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's not something I want to go into too much, but I think, like, thematically speaking, it sets up, obviously, you know, the next episode after this, the Doctor, the Widow of the Wardrobe, kind of like is the epilogue to this kind of idea of how he sees himself in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think Series 8 is very much like a call and response to this as well, in terms of like him coming back around on the idea of like, you know, I did all this, but did that make me a good person, or did that just make me like an asshole? The people of, so, like, I think it's like part of it is what of the reaction as well, is that it's clearly a work in progress, that people were kind of unaware that it was a work in progress at the time as well, that, you know, it's kind of, it's one of those things I think benefits from having like 3 or 4 years of episodes worth after this. Whereas in the moment, it just kind of feel like, okay, well, you know, what was that built into? And the answer was built into a lot of stuff, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It was built into Dorium, who last time we saw Dorium, his paint was running off his body. Don't know if you remember that, Michelle, that like his like shoulders were all streaky.
Yeah.
This time he has no shoulders, so. I love when shows do that, when shows do like headless stuff and you can't like it looks really like convincing because it's like movie magic. But you know, I like, how do you two feel about the question stuff? Because I think it's a fun thing that, yeah,
I'm less mad about it now because it's, I know where it's leading.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also like, I don't like this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Meta stuff like this, it's probably my least favorite plot line to come, just solely because I think it's like a funny idea, and then you like have to, the more you think about it, the more you're like, and then like what does that mean? Like, what if you know, like, what else is there other than his name is, what is his name, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've been saying, though, is, like, this episode thematically is about the Doctor reckoning with his identity, really, the past couple seasons. And so to have it all be about you know, they're using the literal who, what is your name, as like a stand-in for Eleven trying to reckon with his identity and who he is and what the name of the Doctor means. And obviously they're going to lead into like the War Doctor stuff where, you know, is taking back the name the Doctor and things like that. I wondered, because watching this time, it's like, and I've seen it before, obviously, and know where it's leading. Was it incredibly obvious that that was the question the whole time, this whole, or was this like a payoff that people were like, whoa, I never saw that coming.
I never saw it coming. It genuinely took me like by surprise. I remember being like, oh my God, right, Doctor Who. It's the name of the show.
What did you think, like, if you could remember back to 2011, like, what did you think it could have been? Because I do remember the first time watching this. I don't remember ever not feeling like it was obviously going to be Doctor Who.
I don't know. I think whatever ideas I had were really rooted in going back to the fan service thing of like, it's obviously going to be like, you know, a reference you know, do you have a granddaughter, or do you remember going to Spiridon, or do you remember going to, you know, do you remember strangling your friend one time, or do you remember being gunned down in San Francisco and being Will Sasso? You know, whatever thoughts I would have had at the time would have been like kind of really fan brained. And I mean, I was 14 years old, so like the critical skills I had were not, you know, clearly working very well.
I vaguely recall thinking that because the idea of the question is introduced on Let's Go Hitler, if I'm not mistaken. I remember thinking it was someone who was going to be really evil, who was going to be like, it was going to be a really innocuous question, like, can you help me up? And if the Doctor helped this person, this person will then go on to do something really evil. Sort of like how the Ford Knox thing, he kept thinking that it was going to be important, and it was just Wilf knocking to get him out of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought it was going to be. That it was going to be like someone he thinks is a good person is actually a bad person, and they're going to ask him a question. He's going to say yes, and he's not going to know that actually it's going to be a bad thing. That's what I remember thinking.
That makes sense, especially like after having seen the Fort Knox thing and how that plays out. I just feel like, especially in the rest of that like prophecy section, like obviously the fall of the 11th, like that to me, it's all so literal that it's not like hidden very well what this prophecy could mean. And so I just always remember thinking that it was an incredibly obvious reveal that, oh, it's Doctor Who, like, da, da, da. You know, I even think they pull it again later on in the Christmas special episode. That's Clara's introduction at the beginning, where she's saying like, it always begins with the same two words, you know, and she asks the question, and you know, and so it's kind of just a thing that the show does. They love to play with,
yeah,
or I guess Moffat does. Moffat loves to be like,
but you know, but what you have to. Called? I don't remember, like, the fall of the 11th thing struck me back then as like I don't recall back then thinking that the show often talks about the Doctor like this by making things like the 11th literal, you know?
Right.
I remember thinking that was new. So that's why when he was going like the fall of the 11th, and knowing that the 50th was also. We'll get into this into series 7, but the 50th was like, I had so many insane theories because it really did feel like they were going to build up to reveal that. And eventually we did find out the reveal, but I remember thinking, is the reveal that this is not the Doctor? Like, I thought that I seriously thought that the reveal was that at some point the Doctor got replaced by an imposter or something like that.
That's insane.
That's what I, in my head, I was like, because they're saying Doctor Who. How do I put this? Moffat is working on the meta level, but the intention is not to feed onto itself. It's to make a point about the character. So he's using the idea that Doctor Who is the name of the show to make a point about the Doctor, the character. It's not so much getting you to like Doctor Who as a brand as using the fact that you know it as a brand to then tell a story. It's the same thing he does with, you know, in the text of the show, if you have never seen classic Who before, why do you care about the Brigadier, you know? Why do you care that the Brigadier dies? But because you know that the Brigadier is an important character, because you know Nicholas Courtney is an important person, that moment has extra heft.
I don't know that I did know who the Brigadier was at the time.
Yeah.
But I think I just realized that this was a person important to the Doctor.
So that's what I think. Sorry, when did we start talking about this? I briefly forgot.
No,
I apologize.
No, we were talking about the question.
Yes. So that's why I thought, David, cut that, make it seem like I'm really smart. So that's why I thought that that it was, it had some, like, I was not used to thinking in that level. I was still thinking on the level of, if you are going to make the question Doctor Who literal, then clearly it has something to do with, like, the Doctor, you know? I wasn't making the leap that the show wants you to make. And I think that's because the show makes it in a very subtle way, where it's very easy for you to miss it. If you're not paying attention to that scene at the where they're, you know, the entire wedding scene, it's a very long scene. If you're not paying attention to it, you're missing the theme of the entire episode. So that's all it takes. And suddenly I'm like thinking in a completely different level. And in my defense, it is a literal level. The reveal at the end of series 7 is very literal. It is both like there's another Doctor, and also in the sense of there is another Doctor, which can you blame me for guessing that? I don't know.
it is an insane thing for the show to like, if the show had done that, that would have been insane. But Doctor Who has done a million insane things.
So,
I think we might do it one of these days. Honestly, there's a really great video by Samuel Davis where he says that an idea for the show is at the start of the season, you show the Master and the Doctor and they both regenerate and you don't know who's who. And I'm like, that's great. Like, when are they going to? Because that's the only thing that they have never changed about Doctor Who, is that we know who the Doctor is.
I don't know if they, I think. Part of it, I just don't think they'd ever do that, partly because they, from a branding perspective, I think there is part of
it. Yeah, like who do you put?
Yeah. I don't know. One thing I really like, this is going, like, this is kind of skipping way ahead to something I haven't done yet, but like, I really do like how they recontextualize the Fall of the 11th and his name and stuff in Time of the Doctor, where it's like, it's just Clara being like, you've already known his name all the time. It's just the Doctor. That's all he is. You don't have to keep asking it. You can just like help him because he's trying to help you. I think the way they do that is pretty great. Also great is the Wedding of Uhura song. It's got
great episode.
Yeah, it's got like
another great moment we haven't talked about is River revealing to Amy and Rory that the Doctor's alive.
Yes. It's a very funny bit. Very funny bit.
Like Amy sitting out and what did she say? I saw a meteor shower or something, so I opened a bottle. And it's like, I love the idea of just like, you know, some time has passed and River and Amy are just like doing the notes thing and just catching up. And it's a really sweet. Again, it's like such a small scale for the big grand reveal of the episode. It happens like on a back porch table in the backyard over a bottle of wine. And you don't even see the reveal happen. It's just the aftermath of Rory walking out to her celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
loved the show be like, I just told you my name. And then she's like, I'm going to tell you, he didn't do that, actually. It was all bullshit. It's such a good like use of like deflating your own like sense of stakes. Mm-hmm. Really, really fun.
The doctor lies.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes he lies. Can I ask a question of both of you, which is, what do you think the insurance payout on the Tesselacta was when they got burnt to a crisp? Do you think like they got paid out? Or think like their bosses were like, you guys wrecked an entire expensive robot. You guys are, you know, you're paying for that out of your own salary. Or like, you know, do you think the Tesselacta survived being burnt to a crisp? Because like he says like, oh yeah, I barely got singed inside the thing. But like that boat's burning, and you know, Canton used his best fuel to burn it. So, you know,
yeah, gotta be careful. I think there's a good insurance policy. I mean, the organization definitely got some tax benefits for that, mm-hmm. and you know, they're helping to take out the Silence. So,
yeah. Also, the tariffs hadn't come in for them yet, so mm-hmm. they were pretty yeah. they were pretty sorted. Yeah, I don't know. That's season six, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah. A crazy. We definitely
we're gonna rank them,
but not now. We're gonna wibbly wobbly kind of thing where we definitely have watched all the episodes by this point, and we definitely have time to talk about them because we've definitely watched all of them. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about them now.
Okay, so we're going to rank. I want to rank. Yeah. So we'll go from 10 to 1. Do you want to go first?
Yes. So 10 to 1, I have 11.
Mm-mm.
What did you combine?
I mean, I have Rebel Flash and Almost People and Impossible Astro and Day on the Moon combined. I didn't put in Christmas Carol.
I didn't put in Christmas Carol either.
I'm maybe missing something. Hang on. So that's...
Okay, I'll do mine then. So at number 11, I have The Doctor's Wife. Completely soured on that one.
I did not put that one in. That's why...
You forgot about that. Yep. Yeah. Number 10, Let's Kill Hitler. Number 9, The Rebel Flesh / The Almost People. They did give us the goo, which I like. Number 8, The God Complex.
Hold on. You have something to say about the goo that we... That
oh, yes, I did. I bought the goo.
You bought a pot of goo.
I bought a pot of goo, which we'll get sometime soon. And once it gets here, I will record audio of myself opening the bag of goo and touching the goo mm-hmm. to celebrate the end of Series 6.
All right. Potter Who cast fans, it's time to bore Michelle with a brand new unboxing of the goo. I don't know how to focus this shit. All right, so it includes the 11th Doctor. It says here, Cyber Nano Goo and Microfigure. Pod contains Cyber Nano Goo colored purple, orange, or blue. Looks fun. Collectible, constructible, compatible. Warning, choking. Yeah, watch out. You might choke on this. No, it's in my hand. Ew, it's in my hands. All right, let's just... Ugh, oh, this is so fucking awful. It legitimately feels like I'm digging for shit. Ah. Can you hear the sound? Oh, fuck. He's in a little plastic bag. Like I'm digging him out of look. It's so fucking bad, man.
Yes. So number 9, The Rebel Flesh / The Almost People. Number 8, The God Complex. Number 7, Closing Time. Number 6, The Girl Who Waited. Number 5, A Good Man Goes to War. Number 4, The Curse of the Black Spot. Number 3, Nine Terrors. Number 2, The Impossible Astronaut, Day of the Moon. Number 1, The Wedding of River Song.
Okay. Number 11, the Rebel Fesh, almost people. Number 10, the Doctor's Wife. Number 9, Closing Time. Number 8, The Curse of the Black Spot. Number 7, Let's Kill Hitler. Number 6, The God Complex. Number 5, Night Terrors. Number 4, The Girl Who Waited. Number 3, A Good Man Goes to War. Number 2, Impossible Astronaut Day of the Moon. And number 1, The Wedding River Song.
Oh, wow. We both agree.
It's great. It's a great finale to a season that I think has been really up and down, mostly kind of it's walking a tightrope, and it manages to get across a tightrope at the end, but there's a lot of times where you thought it was going to fall off. Like the movie The Walk from 2015. It's just an up and down season, and it ends on a high, but like it opens and ends on a high, but like there's a lot of downs and a few ups in between. Well, you know, Jason, if you want to pitch, then, you know, pitch, please, you know, if you want to, in terms of plugs and whatnot.
Yes, definitely listen to my podcast that I host with another friend of the show, Alexander Wiest. We're Pitch Please. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. We have a good time. Both Michelle and David have been on and will be on in the future. We're covering DC characters right now. We're building our own cinematic universe of characters and stuff. So come give us a listen.
Yeah,
please do. Famous DC character, Washington DC character, that is Meredith Vieira, is in this one as well.
That's so weird.
Yeah, so we...
She comes out of nowhere.
She really does. Michelle, we don't know... I think we're meant to be doing Sarah Jane Adventures Series 5 next, which will be the last Series 5... Last Series 5 in general, really, but the last Sarah Jane series. I don't have my spreadsheet, so I don't know if that's true or whether it's... I think it is that, and then I think it's just Doctor Who for like 2 years, and then it's class, and then it's... No more Torchwood. Sad to see no more Sarah Jane. But that'll be whenever that is. As will life, really. You know, Pod Tor Who Cast.
Cat.
Pod Tor Who.
Cast. All right.
Yeah, all right. Bye.
Next time on Pod Tor Who Cast.
Hello? I thought I'd seen it all. But this is new. Really new.
This is a bad idea.
What are they doing in there?
Shock horror.
Intruders! Come on!
You keep away from him. Don't go anywhere near him.
He's fighting back!
My name is Clive Dana!
I'm coming back.
Miss Smith is quite used to danger.
Take me to your leader.
Sarah Jane Adventures, the new series. Coming soon.